This is an Equity Bates Media podcast.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Have a listen to this. Have a listen to this.
Now, that kind of talk this week dragged Australia's share market to a two-year low. There are, of course, complex reasons for that.
He was the big spender. The big spender.
Doing the grocery shopping can take a huge chunk out of the family budget.
And that's finance.
Hello and welcome to Comedian versus Economist, our final show for the year. We demystify the world of money and help you get a handle on the bigger picture. My name's Adam and we're joined as always by my little older brother and real life economist, Thomas. Hi, Thomas.
Yeah, g'day, Adam. How are you going?
Okay, I went to Melbourne over the weekend, had a great time, ate a lot actually. Anna and I went there and I think we just ate way too much. In fact, I ate so much I had to pay for excess baggage on the flight home just to get my guts on the plane. but I did get home only to discover that I now have COVID as well. So, Thomas, you'll have to provide all of the expert commentary today and analysis. I hope you're up for that. I'm sorry, but you're gonna have to bring it today.
Yeah, right. Well, they're big clown shoes to fill, but I'll do my best.
It is our final show for the year. I mentioned that. It's our final show. Just want to thank everyone out there for tuning in throughout 2022. We will be back again in 2023 and we hope you'll join us again for what should be another massive year in economics and finance and everything. But I did want to get this out at the start and not leave it till the end. So I just want to say a big thank you to the Equity Mates crew, Bryce, Alec, Darcy, Emily, Alf, Simon, and last but certainly not least, Sasha, who produces the show every week. Genuinely couldn't do the show without the support of the whole Equity Mates media gang. Much appreciated. We hope that you guys out there enjoy the show and hopefully you support them and all the podcasts as well. But Thomas, on with the final show for the year and a massive show coming up. As we end the year, I thought it would be good to take stock, pun intended, of where we're at. We all enjoyed the housing trip. Now we're asking, when will the come down end? We'll take a look at next year. We know we're going hunting. We're just not sure if it's for bulls or bears. But first, it wouldn't be CVE without diving into GDP one last time. Thomas, go deep, Padre. What have you got?
It's a bit like air here.
I've got nothing. I've built you up. Said you're going to have to do all the work this show. You got nothing.
No, it was an interesting number. Interesting number. We got 6.6% in the quarter, 5.9% year on year. 5.9 is big, but it comes big after the lockdowns in quarter three 2021, and that was a big negative. So sort of that bouncing back gives us that strong number for the annualized rate. So the annual growth rate. So if you take that 0.6% in the quarter and annualize that, you've got 2.4%. So that's the sort of the pace. If we kept this up for the next three quarters, that's what we'd get. And that's okay. That's right. Not amazing, but it's okay, you know, all things considered.
So is the economy in good health, can we say?
For the moment, I think it's doing okay. It's doing pretty well. I mean, the thing to watch here is that it's largely driven by consumption. So that household consumption was up 1.1% in the quarter. If you take that away, there's almost nothing else going on. Everything else sort of cancels each other out and you've just sort of got flat growth.
What do you mean household consumption? Just things we buy for our house?
No, households. So consumption by households. Yeah, that's just any consumer spending in any retail setting.
As opposed to?
Business investment.
Okay.
Yeah, or exports, imports.
Right. So houses hadn't become sentient and started ordering things for themselves. It was just people that live in them.
Yes.
Houses bought a lot of things for themselves this year.
Yes, yeah, so it's in household consumption, particularly in services. So more than half of the growth in this quarter was from hospitality and transport.
Right.
So, yeah, bouncing back in the services sector.
Did some myself last weekend. Flew to Melbourne, stayed in a hotel. It's worked out really well.
So going forward, we know that households are probably going to start reining spending in a bit. It's interesting that it hasn't happened yet. So interest rates have gone up. Real disposable income is down. It's down 4.1% over the year now because with inflation and wages not keeping pace with inflation and mortgage repayments going up. So that's going down. So they should have less money. So the savings ratio, we talked a lot about this through COVID. So the savings ratio is now down to 7%. That got up to a peak of 22% in the third quarter of 2020.
Right. Is that how much of your wage you're putting away for savings?
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So that ballooned. And then we started talking about the savings war chest that was going to support consumption or investment going forward. That's sort of now normalized. We haven't seen a payback. So we haven't gone into negative saving because people have said, oh, I've saved too much now. They've just sort of gone back to saving what they used to save before the pandemic.
Dare I say we might have sensationalised it a bit by calling it a war chest then if it's lasted, what, a month and a half?
No.
I don't imagine kings and queens of ancient Europe with their war chest filled with gold and silver expected it to last them a month and a half if they got like surrounded by an enemy.
Yeah.
It's okay. We are good people. We are fine for at least another month.
No, I mean, but we've had 300. We got another rate hike last week. We've had 300 basis points in 8 months. Mortgage payments are going up. So far, it hasn't hit consumption. Consumption's still driving the entire economy.
Right.
You know, the business sentiment has turned down. There's softer signs in the economy. But so far, consumption's holding up. And I think that's probably due to the war chest.
Right.
But that's, I think, must be starting to, we're starting to eat into that now.
Mm.
But yeah, but how long that lasts is hard to say.
Mm. We're going to have to raid the swear jar once the war chest runs out. So any other standouts?
The other thing that jumped out for me is what happened with the net exports. And we covered this last week. We're talking about the price cap on gas and coal. That got announced on Friday. So they've now got a price cap come in of $12 a gigajoule for gas compared to a futures price of about $30 now. And coal's capped at $125 a ton versus about $400 now. So that should have some impact. There's still a lot of detail to be worked out, but that should sort of be working. But what was interesting in the GDP numbers is you get these export and import data, and what we've got is we've got a near record terms of trade. So the prices we're getting for our exports are the best they've ever been almost. We've got a $3.2 billion trade surplus, so we're exporting a lot more than we're importing.
Right.
But Australia's net primary income hit a record deficit of $33.2 billion. And what's happening is Australia's net foreign income outflow has exploded to 5.6% of GDP. So the basic story here is that the mining companies are making a lot of money, but they're largely foreign owned. So you look at their share ownerships, it's like BlackRock and all these big foreign funds. And all that money's going back offshore. So even though we're trading, you know, exporting heaps, the money we're making from that is just going offshore. And we've got a net foreign income outflow of 6% of GDP almost, which is massive.
Wow.
So even though we have these wartime profits and the mining companies are making blood money hand over fist, Australia doesn't benefit from that at all. It just goes to foreign shareholders.
That's really disappointing.
Yeah. So I think it's worth remembering. So the mining industry has said they're going to go really hard against this. They're going to run an ad campaign. So when you see ads on the TV talking about how it's going to put sponsorship of junior sport at risk with the price cap, just remember that all this blood money is just going overseas and Australia doesn't benefit from it.
Unless it's the overseas conglomerates are also interested in our junior sport program. All right, Thomas, we're going to look at housing now, and where's the housing market at right now as we end the year?
Yeah, it's still, well, it depends what you want to call it. It's still moderating, still consolidating. It's another term for when you don't want to say prices are falling.
Failing.
So, yeah, no, down 1% in November is the latest data we've seen. So we're now down 7.6% in 7 months, and that's the fastest fall of that size on record. And we're getting close towards, I mean, the interesting thing about property is it doesn't, when it falls, it doesn't tend to fall that far. So in 82, 83, it fell 8.7%. So we're not far off that. Mm. The biggest fall on record was 2017 to 19, where it fell 10.7%. So we're getting close to those levels.
Was that 82, was that around the same time we had runaway inflation as well? Was that,
There was a recession around.
There was a recession. Right.
On the back of high inflation in the 70s, but no.
Right. The recession not exactly we had to have. There. Was that the one?
No. Again. But good. Just keep throwing things you've heard on the news around. You'll land one of them. Right. No, that was a 90s recession.
Okay.
So prices tend not to fall that far. Having given up 7.6% after going up close, like around 30%, you know, so people saying, oh, it's the biggest one, it's the fastest fall on record. It's like, yeah, it's like barely a statistical noise in the scheme of things.
Was it also the fastest rise on record when it like earlier in the year, or was it last year when everything, house prices went through the roof?
Yeah.
Was that also one of the fastest rises?
I'd have to get research onto that, but I think it's probably right. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I think probably it's probably the case.
Right.
Yeah.
So we're not in a bad place then, really. We're doing all right.
No, unless you bought in 2021, unless you stretched yourself to buy in 2021, and then, you know, your prices have fallen and your mortgage repayments have exploded, you're probably in negative equity.
Because that's the double whammy in all this, right? Like the interest rates are going up and house valuations are falling. So, yeah.
Yeah. You're a bit stuck. Like you can't sell without losing a lot of your, you can't sell and you struggle to make your payments. Yeah,
right.
It's a bit of a bind. But it's a relatively small proportion of the market, like total housing stocks owned by people in negative equity now.
Right.
So, yeah, there's a...
And are they going to keep going down prices or like...
That seems to be...
Plateaued?
Yeah, it seems to be the general consensus. You would expect so. Like, I think we'll get past that 10% record in 2019. And we talk about the lag. So the CBA's chief executive Matt Comyn came out the other day and he said that so far CBA has only passed on about half of the rate rises delivered by the RBA between May and November.
Really?
And that by March 2023, only 70% of the increase will have passed through.
Ah.
So,
how does that work? Because I thought the banks were all just pretty much passing it on straight away.
Yes.
Unless it was in like term deposit, in which case they were holding off like rates for a while.
I don't know. I guess it's probably the mortgage mix.
Like the fixed versus variable story.
Yeah, that. But also like there's, you know, CBA would have like 100 different mortgage products and
maybe
people move around between them and...
Honeymoon rates and things like that.
Yeah, I guess that's right. But the fixed rate thing's a big story too. So
I feel like I'm bringing some expert analysis here. You be careful.
Expert analysis / anecdote.
Anecdotes and guesses.
About 35% of outstanding mortgage credit is on fixed term rates, and about 2/3 of those are due to expire by the end of 2023. So there's still a lot of people who fix rates at super cheap rates who haven't seen that go up yet.
Right.
And when they do, sometimes I saw someone say that in September 2023, if you're coming off your fixed rates, then your mortgage repayments are going to go up by 70%. Yeah, so big, big jump. So the real question, and we've got talking about 35% of the mortgage market going to be doing something like that. So the real question is, are households prepared for that? The question is sort of like with the consumption story is, are they cutting back spending now because they know their repayments are going to go up, or are they just sort of ignoring it and just planning to deal with it when it comes, which would be interesting. And then if they do that, then they could potentially find themselves in trouble you know, be a 70% jump in your mortgage repayments, that's a big jump.
On the plus side, though, as they all hear the news and everyone's like, oh, shit, then the swear jar's going to go up. All right, hey, before we get to a break, I did get a couple of listener emails this week, Thomas. Oh, we did, sorry, not me. I'm sure it was to both of us. In fact, this one in particular, I'm sure, was pretty much directly to you. But Cameron, CVE at equitymates.com, who made us feel both good by saying, g'day, team. I have a question. Where does the extra money go that the RBA charges lenders? Do they charge lenders? What's their story?
I don't think they do charge lenders.
Yeah, there you go, Cameron. It goes nowhere.
I can't think of a context.
The RBA makes money though, don't they? They lend money to the banks, don't they?
No, they don't. Well, I mean, they did. There was the term funding facility through COVID where they were lending money at cheap rates, but that was a liquidity measure. That's not normal business practice.
Okay.
No, and they do, but they do make money. Like they stabilize the currency. So. They buy when it gets too low and they sell when it gets too high. So they're buying low, selling high, so they're making money there.
Mm.
Yeah, and then with the printing money and they buy bonds, through the money printing through COVID, so they would print the money, just give themselves the money, go buy bonds from the government. The government would then pay them a dividend on the bonds, pay them a return on the bonds. And so they were making money that way on the money. They were investing the money they just printed and making a return.
Sounds like a sweet gig.
Yeah, well, then it got better, right? So then because they're a government agency, any money they make just goes back to the government.
Right.
So the government was paying them interest on the bonds.
Yeah.
The RBA was taking that and then giving it back to the government.
Right. If you're looking for a good Christmas party this year, can I suggest the RBA Christmas party? One of the best government slush funds going around. All right, why don't we take a break here, grab a quick word from this week's sponsor and be back with more Comedian versus Economist right after this.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to Comedian versus Economist. You can, of course, send us an email, cve@equitymates.com, or get us on social media on Facebook and Instagram. I should call out too that it seems like a long time ago now, but we did do like a Economics 101 series for season one of Comedian versus Economist. So if you're new to the show, if you haven't heard that, then I'm sure there's some good learnings there. So maybe get your ears around that over the Christmas break. But Thomas, talking about next year and 2023, I get a bit confused because I hear lots of commentary. Some people say it's the end of the world. You should pull all your money out of your stocks because there's a big recession's coming. Other people I hear saying, look, now's the best time to be buying and getting into the market and that kind of thing. So everyone can't be right. So I thought we'd just go through maybe some of the big themes, economic themes, and get your take on the bull and the bear case for 2023. So starting with inflation, what's the bull case for inflation, first of all?
So a reference point is where the share market's going in 2023, if we're bullish or bearish. And so in that with inflation, I think the bullish case is that inflation tends to be a lagging indicator, and all of the sort of the forward indicators we have of inflation seem to have peaked. So we talked a bit about that last week, like all the supply chain bottlenecks. We had the bottle shop index that's rolled over, and so that should see inflation start to ease off in the near future. And so that would be your bullish case. That'd probably be my central guess as well.
And with inflation easing off, that'll mean interest rates will flatten or maybe even drop.
Yeah, potentially. Yeah, that should be right. That's that's also tied into the bull case.
Right.
Yeah. The bear case is that, you know, we have had sort of like these sort of local peaks in inflation already this year with a few flavors where it felt like we were peaking and then it didn't turn out. Prices tended to be stickier than we imagined. So that's sort of the bearish case, is that it won't come back quickly, or if it starts to it might peak but then hold at a higher than target for quite a while, potentially through the full year.
Right.
So that would be your bear case scenario.
What's the outlook for GDP?
I think the bull case is that is the soft landing, that GDP slows but you don't get a recession. We walk that narrow path and think the economy cools down and prices cool down, but we don't tank GDP and things are okay.
I heard it referred to as the Goldilocks scenario, which not too hot and not too cold. Like, it's just right.
Yeah.
I didn't know we needed another analogy for it. I think soft landing was getting us by.
Yeah, the narrow path of the soft
narrow
landing
path
is
of the
Goldilocks
soft landing. Yeah, that leads to Goldilocks' house. Yeah. Well, there's three bears in there, though. You don't want that in your market.
So the bear case on growth is that we don't nail that soft landing and things tank. Particularly, like you look at Australia, like it's consumption driven. Consumer sentiment data is terrible right now. Like, it's worse than it was when COVID first hit, and we were potentially looking at the end of the world. Consumers are more pessimistic now than they were then.
Really?
Yeah, it's pretty weird. Which is because they're seeing rates go up, they're feeling that pain directly and they don't like it.
Right.
But so far, even though, you know, rate pain is there and consumption sentiment has tanked, we haven't seen falls in consumption yet, even though consumption is the single driver of the economy right now.
Yeah, right.
That seems like quite a fragile scenario and could fall over pretty easily. It's not hard to see that story falling over.
Yeah, right.
And we find ourselves in recession in a global recession as well, like a synchronized global recession.
Yeah, that's bad. Have we had one of those before?
It would be a while. Yeah. I mean, there's one in COVID, obviously, but
that was kind of. Well, kind of wasn't really a recession, was it, COVID? Like, it was like a forced shutdown of everything. It's kind of not.
Yeah. Sort of different story.
So you gave me the list. So you've got monetary policy on the list. I don't really even know what that question means. What are we talking about with monetary policy?
Well, that's interest rates.
Oh, okay.
That's interest rates and
perfect.
Yeah, quantitative easing, quantitative tightening, quantitative easing.
Right.
Yeah. No, it's good. You've learned a lot this year. We're going to talk about interest rates every week. So on the interest rate fronts, the bull case is that inflation has peaked and the central banks will pause pretty quickly, you know, potentially. I think there's a good chance that the RBA will pause in February when they meet next.
Yeah.
They'll be willing to sort of, you know, at least take a month off. And if some of the data softens, then that might be turn into a longer term pause. Markets are still pricing in a higher terminal rate, but it's possible.
Mm.
And then the uber bullish case is that as the economy starts to soften, rate cuts start coming in mid year.
Right.
That's the uber bullish case. But there's enough. It's enough to build a bullish case just on the idea that we're close to terminal and there's no more rate hikes from here.
How much of it will be like? How much in Australia will it be dictated by what happens in the rest of the world? Like, if America keeps hiking rates and keeps, you know, inflation keeps going out of control, and the same in Europe, then does Australia kind of naturally follow suit, or we're doing our own thing?
I think we largely do our own thing, but it's definitely influenced by what's going on.
Hmm.
It depends on what's happening with the currency. That's sort of where the big impact is felt. So if you create a large interest rate differential, then if Aussie debt's paying more than US debt or vice versa, then people demand more Aussie dollars to buy those assets. So it can influence the exchange rate.
Right. Okay.
But that could also be a good thing as well. So yeah, we don't just walk in lockstep, but we are definitely influenced by what happens globally. But yeah, just on the bear case, the bear case is just the opposite, that we're not done.
That sounds like a cop out. Couldn't we just say that for every one of these? Why do we have to have a bull and a bear case? We could just go through the bull case, and at the end of the bull case, we say in the bear case is just the opposite of what we just said.
Yeah. Well, there's nuance there that's interesting. There is, yeah. No. Particularly in the US, because, you know, people have been interpreting Jerome Powell's comments as saying that the pause is there, and he's saying, like, no, we're just going to, like, have less aggressive rate hikes, but there's still more rate hikes to come.
Yeah.
Particularly if inflation is sticky, then we could get more out of the central banks. So that's your bear case. Yeah, okay. On valuations, sort of like as the economy softens, that impacts corporate earnings, which then should theoretically influence the outlook for share prices. So the question is, has the correction we've seen in share prices dealt with the correction that we're, like, the downgrading to the revenue outlook? And so earnings in America have been revised down by 5% already. And so the bull case is saying, like, yep, that those earnings have been revised down by 3%. The average drawdown in a bear market outside of recessions is 27%. We've already seen that. Therefore, we're done. The market should turn from here and we should be okay. This is all assuming, like, the other bull case scenarios hold and there's no...
Yeah, right.
More rate hikes and no recession.
Mm.
The bear case scenario is saying, like, well, we haven't priced, if there is a recession, that hasn't been priced in yet. Bear markets, when there is a recession, the average drawdown is 48% in America.
Wow.
So there's quite a long way to go towards that. And the stat I love, which I saw the other day, that in America, that none of the US bear markets in the past 100 years have ended before the recession had begun.
Let me just get my head around that for a second.
COVID
slowed my brain down.
So often share markets will lead, bear markets will lead in share, so share prices will fall ahead of the fall, ahead of the recession.
Right.
Because earnings start to fall, that starts to impact the outlook for shares, and so you get the bear market before you get the recession.
Right.
But in the past 100 years, when you've had a major bear market, when there's been associated with a recession, the bear market has never ended before the recession had begun.
Right.
Which is sort of like, so saying, like, the idea that the bear market has ended now already really hinges on whether there's a recession next year or not. If there is, there's no historical precedent. If there's a recession next year, there's no historical precedent for the bear market having ended already.
I'm just a bit sick of being in uncharted water the last couple of years. Like, it just feels like, and maybe it's just because I'm learning about this stuff or not learning as the case may be, but sort of hearing about this stuff, but it feels like the last couple of years, we're hearing a lot of this has never happened before. I'm just a bit exhausted by this has never happened before.
It's partly because this has never happened before is a great rhetorical device in economics.
Right.
Like it's a neat way to make that point, for example, that bear markets don't end before recessions start.
Yeah, right.
To say it's never happened before really brings home how statistically unusual it is. So we like that kind of rhetorical device in economics.
What are the global risks we're talking about next year? So that we've got the war in Ukraine, we've got what else? China's coming out of lockdown.
So China's probably the big one. Like it's they've had their zero COVID policy. That's hurt the economy a lot more than that, you know, is obviously ideal for them. And they're having some sort of stimulatory response now, but it's nothing like what we've seen in the past out of China. Yeah, so, but the bull case is that the war in Ukraine settles down, energy prices return to normal, China returns to growth relatively quickly. The bear case is that none of those things happen things get a lot worse.
There's a double-edged sword too in China, isn't there? So if China returns to full production, full growth or whatever, then they need a lot of resources to do that, which then brings about a lot of demand and competition in the market that hasn't been there for the last little while because of their COVID zero policy. So as much as we kind of want China back up and running again, it also has its own ability to create problems, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's potentially right. And you can probably add a risk there around supply chain bottlenecks and the deglobalization trend we've seen since COVID. Our supply chains are still getting their head around the new geopolitical order and Russia and China and the US becoming, you know, less friendly. That's still creating a lot of changes, and that has the potential to create more bottlenecks, which has the potential to create more inflation and more drama. So yeah, that's definitely in the mix. That said, it's always easier to identify downside risks than upside risks.
People are generally pessimistic about things.
Yeah, why is that? Okay, because like for the economy to function as normal requires a lot of things to go right. So if any one of those things fails, then you get a shock and things go bad.
Right.
To get a boost, it's sort of hard to see where that comes from. Like things don't tend to go particularly like extra well. That's not really a thing. Like shocks happen, like, you know, like COVID, and then you get a massive monetary policy response, and that creates a massive upside. That's, you know, no one saw that coming. That wasn't on the cards at all.
It's not like inflation wins the lotto or something and everyone's like, wow, that's going to have a massive upside. All right, why don't we, I think that does us for this week and for 2022. Thank you so much once again for tuning in. We really do appreciate it. We love getting all your emails and messages and all the support. Yeah, as I say, we wouldn't be here without your support and without the support of Equity Mates Media. So thanks to everyone who's tuning in each and every week. Don't forget, if you're still looking for a stocking filler, the Equity Mates Get Started Investing book is available online through Booktopia and all good bookstores. Thomas, maybe we can write a book next year. Something to do.
Yeah.
Probably picture won't. Book. All right. Yeah. That does us. Thank you once again. We'll talk to you. Have a very safe and festive and enjoyable Christmas season. A happy new year. And we will talk to you again in 2023. Bye for now.
You have been listening to an Equity Mates Media production. In the spirit of reconciliation, Equity Mates Media acknowledges the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea, and community. We pay our respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today. This podcast is intended for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general advice only and has not taken into account your personal financial circumstances, needs, or objectives. Before acting on general advice, you should consider if it is relevant to your needs and read the relevant product disclosure statement. And if you're unsure, please speak to a financial professional. The hosts of this podcast and their guests may have positions in the companies mentioned. Equity Mates Media operates under an Australian Financial Services Licence 540697.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.